It's Weekends on All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Jackie Lydon. Coming up on today's show, a leading voice in the young Muslim movement in the United States, poetic tweets, and our first reading from round 10 of our 3-minute fiction contest. But first, railroads have been a part of American culture since the 19th century, when the iron horse, the steam engine, began to transform the landscape. Here's a song from a Dust Bowl migrants camp of the 30s. But railroads will also help us imagine our tomorrows. That's our cover story today, Tracking the Railroad, Passenger, High Speed, and Freight. To the hills of Minnesota where the rippling waters fall, no changes need be taken on that Wabash Cannonball. In his first term, President Obama promised to create a national system of high-speed rail, not the first president to have done so. In January of 2010, in the stimulus bill, $8 billion was allocated for high-speed rail projects, but Congress rejected federal funding for high-speed rail. Last week, in his State of the Union address, the president reiterated that goal.
Within 25 years, our goal is to give 80% of Americans access to high-speed rail. This could allow you to go places in half the time it takes to travel by car. For some trips, it'll be faster than flying, without the pat-down.
There are significant political hurdles in Congress for a national high-speed rail system. But Christopher Barkin is the director of the Illinois Rail Transportation and Engineering Center at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. He says there's lots of reasons to invest in high-speed rail.
High-speed rail provides very convenient, comfortable, environmentally friendly, economical transportation. It's easier to use than, say, traveling by air. You can walk up, buy your ticket using a machine, and be on the train in 10 minutes. You know, there's no waiting around. You know, you don't have to get to the airport an hour early. You don't have to go through all of the security hassles. And they're highly reliable because they're not really affected by the weather or other environmental factors.
But he says, never underestimate the decades-long American love affair with the automobile.
People in this country are quite accustomed to getting in their car and driving wherever they want. And for some trips, that is a better way to go.
Barkin says that in order for high-speed rail to be viable, something will have to change to make car travel less appealing. One change already happening in many places, in raging traffic.
In highly congested, highly populated urban regions, the opportunity to get on a train without much difficulty, ride in comfort with your Wi-Fi. It's just a very comfortable, convenient mode of travel. And that's very definitely the experience in many other developed nations in the world. And frankly, right there in the Northeast Corridor where you are, that's actually an excellent example of a successful, what we would call higher speed rail system that's operating and has been operating for almost a century and is continuing to improve.
What about the vast interior, the land of the Golden Spike? That would be Promontory, Utah, by the way, where the Central Pacific and Union Pacific Railroads came together in 1869. Many critics say the president's goal for a network of high-speed passenger trains is impractical, that America is just too spread out, too large and diffusely populated for high-speed economics to work. Outside of political opposition, though, there are some practical obstacles as well. Again, Chris Barkin of the University of Illinois.
The population densities in countries where it has worked are different than in the U.S. Well, that's certainly true out in the West, where you have vast swaths of land with very little population. But those of us who live in Illinois or Indiana or Minnesota or Wisconsin or Ohio, you know, have large metropolitan centers. And if you actually look at the demographics, the distribution of the people, the geography, it's not that dissimilar from, say, France, which is another country that has developed a very successful high-speed passenger rail system and continues to expand their system.
Let's head west to a state that very much wants to make high-speed passenger rail work.
I'm Jeff Morales. I'm CEO of the California High-Speed Rail Authority.
Last year, voters in California favored going ahead with a multi-billion-dollar high-speed passenger rail project.
We're talking trains that will be going over 200 miles an hour. We don't have any of these trains in the U.S. today, but the fastest trains in the U.S. right now are going about 160 miles an hour. That's the Acela on the Northeast. In most places around the country, we're talking about 79 or at most 90 miles an hour.
From 90 miles an hour to over 200 miles an hour, such a system would revolutionize travel on the West Coast. In addition to billions of dollars in state bond money, California now has to raise about $10 million in private cash. Right now, they only have enough to begin construction on a small portion of their plan. This summer, they'll begin construction on a 200-mile stretch of rail through the Central Valley west of San Francisco.
Our current plans, we expect to be running full high-speed trains within the next decade.
Will this spur passenger rail elsewhere? Morales says he has some advice for states considering the kind of project California's undertaking. Think long-term.
You know, what we're building is something akin to a state highway system. It's really a system that'll be in place for well over 100 years. You know, when you're making an investment like that, you're talking billions of dollars of investment.
As much as political problems have beset passenger rail, freight rail is a very different story. Now, if you were a farmer, you might realize that.
My name is Mark Sprague, and I'm a farmer here in Illinois.
Mark Sprague's farm covers about 3,000 acres in Hull, Illinois, near the Mississippi River. In fact, across the river from Hannibal, Missouri. Sprague grows mostly corn and soybeans, a bit of winter wheat, and he relies heavily on freight rail to get it all around.
For the past several years, I'd say close to 70% of my corn has actually left this area by rail.
Farming is crucially, as in many things, a simple matter of economics. Cheap rail is hugely important to Mark Sprague's successful harvest.
You can move a ton of freight, about 125 miles, with a gallon of diesel fuel. But by rail, it's more like 500 miles you can move a ton of freight with a gallon of diesel fuel.
From Sprague's farm in Hull, Illinois, his corn travels 130 miles by rail to the city of Decatur in central Illinois. He says he feels like he's in a good spot. Freight rail carriers compete for his business, which helps keep it affordable.
There's good competition between the rail lines. There's several major carriers. And here in the Midwest, we're served by all of them, essentially.
We're the world's leader in freight movement by rail. We have 140,000 miles of track, an interconnected network that binds this country together.
That's Ed Hamburger, the CEO of the Association of American Railroads, a freight rail industry group that says its network doesn't come cheap.
Not everybody knows that the freight rail system in America is privately owned. This year alone, America's private freight companies will spend $24.5 billion, that's 40 cents of every revenue dollar, back into the infrastructure in terms of new locomotives, new railroad ties, new miles of track, new signal systems, new rail cars, $24.5 billion, and it is all private money.
He says that for America, freight rail is a geographic necessity.
In the United States, with 3,000 miles from coast to coast, we better have a pretty effective, efficient, and cost-effective way of moving that freight just to get to the ports so we can compete on world markets.
So why are freight trains so cost-effective? After all, they're heavy and slower moving than trucks. The average freight train doesn't break 50 miles an hour. The answer is in the fuel.
We move one ton of freight 469 miles on 1 gallon of fuel.
That's right. On a single gallon of diesel fuel, a freight train can move a ton of freight over 450 miles. Compare that to tractor-trailer trucks. Dave Oshecki is a representative of the American Trucking Association.
Now, we average, 6.5 to 7 miles per gallon, if you will, which isn't tremendous, but that's up from, 5.5, 6 of just a few years ago.
In simple terms, that means freight trains transport 3 to 4 times the cargo that trucks do. And yet, probably because people don't see freight trains as much, Ed Hamburger says Americans' notions of the railroads are kind of out of date.
Everybody says, I love railroads. Everybody says, my grandfather worked on the railroad. And everybody says, my goodness, why don't we have a railroad system like Japan has? We have the world's best freight rail system. But no one sees that. And when they do see it, they're stuck waiting for a mile-long train to go by so they can get to their child's soccer game.
Actually, the success, Hamburger says, of high-speed passenger trains could threaten the health of freight rail if not carefully coordinated.
In the United States, outside of the Northeast Corridor between here and Washington and Boston, Amtrak operates over these privately owned freight rail rights of way. And so it is a partnership between the freight railroads and Amtrak all around the country.
That means, as it stands now, Amtrak pays private companies in the center of the country to run its low-speed passenger trains on freight rail tracks. That's indirect federal revenue. But high-speed trains would need their own tracks, depriving the freight rail system of some of that federal money. How to build a high-speed system without hurting the freight industry is a problem that hasn't yet been solved, says Chris Barkin of the University of Illinois' Rail Tech Center.
The freight railroad network is a great asset to our economy and our environment, and we need to be careful that expansion of passenger service does no harm to the viability of that efficient freight rail transportation system that we've developed.
So it may be one of the great ironies of the 21st century that a 19th century technology, revamped, will be a new kind of golden high-tech spike, linking the country together.
Come along and ride this train. Come along and ride this train. Cross the mountains, prairies, reservations, rivers, levees, plains.
After the break, we kick off round 10 of our 3-Minute Fiction, plus our weekly chat with James Fallows. This is NPR News.